This is HPR episode 2598 entitled, Calculating Planetary Orbits in Haskell. It is hosted by Tutorto and is about 29 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Tutorto talks about calculating planetary orbits.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello and welcome to the Hacker Public Radio. I'm your host, Tuturto, and this show will be about planetary orbits and Haskell. The program I'm talking about here is based on the guide by Paul Schleider. There's a link to his webpage in the show notes. I recommend you to check that out because that has a really good explanation of these things. There's also other links on the show notes on the Wikipedia about the terms that I'm going to use. I'll try to explain them here, but the Wikipedia articles are probably a lot better. So first word about coordinate systems. In general, fixing a location of an object requires a reference point or origo, and since everything in the space is moving, there's many different coordinate systems to pick from. And in a given problem, a correct choice of coordinate system makes calculations a lot easier, for example. And nothing prevents you from switching from one system to another as the need arises. For example, if we were to travel from Earth to Mars, we probably would start from the geocentric system where the origo is around the Earth, and switch to the heliocentric system, where the center is the Sun and planets are moving around it. And when we enter into the orbit of the Mars, we would switch to the Mars-centric system, where the Mars is in the center. Because less there's a moving things, or rather funnily moving things, the easier it is to do the calculations. And this does not even take account that you have to move on the surface of the planet. On the surface of the planet, you have yet another set of coordinate systems. Next, about orbits that we are going to calculate. So we are going to calculate how the planets are moving in the space. But orbits of the planets are elliptical, and they are slightly tilted, and they change slowly over time. And there's six orbital elements that can be used to define shape of the orbit and location of the planet on that orbit. And first one of those is the eccentricity. As I said, orbits are elliptical, and eccentricity just tells how elliptical they are. Are they completely circular, or are they really, really squished? And if the if eccentricity is high enough, that means that the orbit is in the elliptical anymore, it's a paraboloid, meaning that the object just swings past the, for example, the Sun, and never comes back. Next one is semi-major axis. This is a sum of periapsis and apoapsis divided by 2, And periapsis and apoapsis are the points on the orbit that are closest and farthest away of the body that we are orbiting around. And this basically it's the, if you take the ellipse, draw the longest possible line you can inside of it and half it. This is the semi-minus axis. Next one is inclination. That tells how tilted the orbit is, because orbits aren't completely on the level in regards to the reference plane. I mean, they could be, but they usually aren't. This tells how many degrees it's tilted, which means that when there's any inclination, the planet is sometimes over the reference plane and sometimes under the reference plane. And reference plane in this case, when we are talking about the planets orbiting the sun, is the ecliptical plane, which is defined by the plane that the Earth is rotating around the sun. So actually the Earth has a zero inclination. Next one is longitude of the ascending node. This tells where the orbit transfers from below to above of the ecliptic plane, because not all the ellipses aren't the neatly in the same direction, with the long tail pointing to same direction. This defines where exactly how if the ellipse is rotated. And last one is the next one is argument of periapsis. Sometimes this is called the argument of perihelion or argument of perigee, depending on what you are orbiting. But periapsis is the general term. Perigee is when you are talking about objects orbiting around the Earth, and perihelion is when you are talking about objects orbiting around the Sun. But this one defines the rotation of the ellipse on the orbital plane. Like, you can imagine this by sticking the stick on your center of the orbit and rotating it slightly. This rotates the ellipse on the plane that is defined by the orbit itself. And last one is the true anomaly. This defines position of the planet as an angle on the orbit at some given special time called epoch. And I have linked a Wikipedia article that has a nice little drawing about all these elements. I recommend you to check that out, because it's a lot easier to see the picture and understand, like, oh, this is how the angles and axes relate to each other. It's rather difficult to explain it while speaking. And because we are dealing with the computers, we are dealing with the radians. All the trigonometrical functions that Haskell uses uses radians that as a unit of the angle. So I had to write a couple helper functions to convert to and from and basically between the degrees and radians. And then there's a little helper function that clamps the degrees to between 0 to 360 degrees. That's not really, well, that isn't really needed, but it makes our output of the program slightly nicer, because it's easier, at least for me, it's easier to think that there's an angle of 10 degrees than there's an angle of 370 degrees. It shouldn't make difference to the result of the calculations. But in any case, I made one that was suggested by the slide anyway. And then, like I said, the orbital elements change over time, so we need a time that is expressed as a fractions of days since the 31st of December 1990 midnight. Okay, now we know what we are talking about, so I can start going through the actual calculations. Well, I'm not going to read out the equations and or even try to explain how they do the different transformations. For that, it's a good idea to check the tutorial that I linked. So I made this as an experimental program. I have written this in several times with various languages, and now I wanted to try to writing it in Haskell and see how the type system can be used to enforce calculations to use the correct types. Like, there's a plenty of different coordinates, plenty of different angles, and I wanted a type system that makes sure that I don't mix, for example, positions in different coordinates. This can, of course, done with pretty much any statically typed language. So I started by defining Sun, Earth, and Mercury. They are just algebraic data types without any parameters, so I can just say that something is Sun or Earth or Mercury. And then I defined a type class, orbit, that as name suggests, defines orbital parameters. This has two type parameters, center and the body. Because this way I can express on a type level that Mercury is rotating Sun and Earth is rotating the Sun. And if I were to try to calculate how Mercury moves in relation to the Earth, I would mix up all those various numbers. I would be able to calculate location in some coordinate system of the Earth in respect of the Sun and Mercury in respect of the Sun, and then translate them and get the location of Mercury in respect of the Earth. So that's why I defined this with two type parameters. And this regards turning on the multi-param type X classes and flexible instances and flexible context extensions for the Haskell. I'm not 100% sure what those actually do. I know that multi-param type classes is needed to be able to define type classes with two parameters, but those later on I had to turn on to get the program to compile. As you might have guessed, I'm not terribly good at the Haskell. It's more of a hobby of mine where I play with that now and then. So in this type class, orbit, I have functions that are used to calculate those orbital parameters that I mentioned earlier with a given date, given day. So if I were to compile longitude of ascending node and give that two parameters, Earth and Sun, and some date, that would give me the longitude of ascending node of Earth's orbit around the Sun on that given day. And return values of all these functions are also algebraic data types with two parameters, So the longitude of ascending node that is given me actually encodes that this is Earth longitude of ascending node around on an orbit around the sun, and it has this value. Same with the inclination or eclipse argument of periapsis, semi-major axis eccentricity, and mean anomaly. It just makes it easier to deal with things when you have bunch of angles floating around. And as I mentioned, Haskell uses radians, like pretty much, I suspect, almost every programming language. And I cannot visualize radians that easily on my head, so I wrote algebraic data type degrees that can wrap anything, and type class degreeable that is type class with a single parameter and single function to dec. So if I create an instance of, for example, mean ANA of that degrees, that means that any mean anomaly weight for any orbit I can turn into degrees. See, just simplified saying to dec and the value of that mean anomaly. And it actually wraps the mean anomaly value into degrees algebraic data type, because this changes the type, so I don't accidentally use this converted value somewhere later on the program. Anything that isn't wrapped into degrees is radians, and anything that has been wrapped to the degrees cannot be used in the calculations. So now that we can calculate our orbital elements in respect of given date, because they slowly wander around, we can start working on the position on the orbit. And this is, first we need the eccentric anomaly. I tried to research what this actually is, but I couldn't figure it out. Turns out there's three anomalies: eccentric anomaly, mean anomaly, and true anomaly, that all relate to the angles on the orbit. And the true anomaly is the location of the planet as an angle, and the mean anomaly is a sort of mean value. Like if the planet were rotating or orbiting a completely circular plane, orbit, then the mean anomaly and true anomaly would give the same answer, I think. But anyway, first we need to calculate this. We have a mean anomaly. This is convenient mathematical angle, I've been told. But we need to turn that into a true anomaly, so that we know exactly where the planet is on the orbit. And we do that by first calculating the eccentric anomaly, which needs the mean anomaly and the eccentricity, how squished the orbit is, and produces an eccentric anomaly, and with this we can combine with the eccentricity again, get the true anomaly. So this gives you the angle of the where the planet is on the orbit. And then we calculate the distance of the objects. The object we are orbiting around, and the object that is doing the orbiting, which is uses eccentric anomaly, eccentricity, and semi-major axis and produces distance between these two objects. Again, distance is a algebraic data type, so it actually says that this is a distance of, for example, Sun and Mercury. It is pretty convenient when, it's just pretty convenient. And with these two numbers, we have to fix the relative location of the object. Of course, this is in a polar. No wait, I think it's a polar coordinate system, and it's on a orbital plane. So we know the distance, and we know the angle between our reference point and the angle that the planet is currently. But this is, like I said, it's an orbital plane. It's a plane that is defined by the, basically it doesn't take the inclination into the account. And for this, we want to rotate our coordinate into ecliptic coordinates. This is the coordinate system that is defined, for example, with Sun in the origo and with a three-dimensional grid. You come on X, Y, Z coordinates. And if I remember correctly, the Z-axis points to the upwards of from the ecliptical plane, as much as there's upwards in the space. I think it's a north. I think it's defined that the side that has the north pole of the Earth is the up, and the X points to the vernal equinox. But that's not so important when it comes to this episode. We just want to translate into the three-dimensional coordinates called ecliptic coordinates. And from here, we need the true anomaly distance, because this is the location of the planet that we are. And this location is what we are rotating. Longitude of ascending node, which, and argument of periapsis and inclination to ecliptica. And with a bit of trigonometry, we can rotate our orbit, our location on the ecliptic coordinates. And if we want to calculate where the stuff is when viewed from the Earth, this is not yet enough, of course, because these are in relation to the Sun. If we were standing on the surface of the Sun, then we could use these, continue using these coordinates, but we are not standing there. So we need to translate the, we need to transfer the origo of our coordinate system from Sun to the Earth. And this we do by calculating the location of the Earth. Actually, the tutorial uses the system where that treats Sun as orbiting around the Earth. But it's just a matter of point of view, basically. But we calculate the location of the Earth. We have the location of the another planet, Mercury in our example. And then both of them are using the same coordinate system, so we just subtract those coordinates from each other, and we end up with the Mercury's location on the Earth-centered ecliptic coordinate system, which is starting to get where we want. But this is not all yet. The three-dimensional coordinates are not that easy to point from the Earth, or rather they contain extra information we don't need. So we are moving things to the equatorial coordinate system. And this you can imagine that you would slice the Earth from the equator from the latitude of 0 degrees, and the plane that is defined by that is the equatorial plane. And on this coordinate system, we express things in a right ascension declination. Right ascension tells the direction on the plane, and it's given in hours actually, because the Earth rotates around in 24 hours, so the plane is divided to 24 hours, and those are divided into the minutes and seconds. And declination is the how angle of the object from that equatorial plane. So 0 degrees it's on the plane, and 90 degrees it's at the zenith, so somewhere really close to the polaris. And for this we need our ecliptic coordinates given in respect of the Earth, not on respect to the Sun, and current day, and we can calculate the location of the planet in the equatorial coordinate system. And this is now at the point where you can go outside and point to the sky and say that, okay, my computer program says that bright dot over there is Mercury. So, and this concludes our calculations for now. There's a future improvement that could be added, like you could translate into the horizontal coordinate system, which takes into account your location on the surface of the Earth, because we are not standing in the middle of the Earth. We are standing on the surface of the Earth. So we would need to rotate things yet again and take time of the day into account, so we could get our angles in respect of the horizon of your local position. This would make it even easier to find where the planet is on the sky. And another thing I might add later is the calculations for perturbations, because these equations used so far assume that there's only two objects. There's the thing that we are orbiting around, and then there's the thing that we are orbiting in. So they are nice and clean and easy calculations, well, easy when you copy them from the net. But there's 9 planets in the solar system. All of them are tugging each other constantly. All of them are orbiting. There's some huge ones like Jupiter and Saturn. So every time those planets swing by, they are messing up with the orbits of another planet. So the orbits wobble somewhat. So it's not too difficult, but I haven't written that part yet. But we would have to take into account how those big planets change the orbits of another planets to get into even better accuracy in these calculations. These are already enough that you can really go outside and point that bright dot is the planet I'm interested in. But well, that concludes this episode. If you have any questions or comments, please let me know, or even better, record your own episode. See you later.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.